Hello, you're listening to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, presented by Brandon Elliott. This show will be going over all aspects of real estate investing and is intended to educate, motivate, and prepare you to take action on your first or next real estate investment. For more information, please visit BrandonElliottInvestments.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy.
Welcome back, everyone, to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Brandon Elliott. I'm excited today. We are going to be talking with a veteran in the game, somebody that's been doing this for 24 plus years, the 1031 exchange. What is it? What are the benefits? You know, the nitty gritty in between and how it could better serve you. Our guest today, Dave Foster from Florida, has been doing this quite a bit of time, helping out many investors along the way. And could be potentially helping out you as well if you want to connect with him after this episode. But Dave, how are we doing today?
Hey, we're doing awesome. And you are very kind, my friend. Yeah. You use the word veteran, whereas my kids would just say, Dad, you're old.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. Hey, since this is a live thing, I don't see the questions on my end, but we can spend as much time as we want. If people want to shoot questions in, we'll see if we can answer some online, on air, I mean.
Yeah,
I'm happy to do that.
So we're just doing the live for cross promoting and getting some answers coming in. If we have any time towards the end and we see some coming in, then we'll definitely bring it up. But as far as, you know, anybody out there that doesn't know who you are, where you're from, what you've been doing for real estate related, do you mind just giving that 10,000 foot view?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am what's called a qualified intermediary for 1031 exchanges. The 1031 exchange is a federal process that allows you to sell investment real estate and buy new investment real estate without having to pay tax in the middle. In other words, what you get to do is take that tax and invest it for yourself. So Albert Einstein once called compound interest the eighth wonder of the world. And that's exactly what the 1031 exchange allows you to do, is to take the tax, compound that, so that as long as you are selling real estate and then reinvesting in new real estate, you'll never pay the tax. The tax compounds for you, and you'll end up with a lot more in your portfolio. I've been doing that. I started out doing it for myself because my very first real estate purchase was a mistake.
Tell me about that.
I bought a duplex in Denver, Colorado. I fixed it up. I rented it. I sold it. And my accountant said, boy, you have a tax bill. $30,000. Because I did not know about the 1031 exchange. It wasn't available to regular investors back then. And so I ended up shelling out a check. If you were to take $30,000 today and go find a piece of software and run one of those compounding scenarios, $30,000 compounded at a 10% rate of return for 30 years is how many hundreds of thousands of dollars I would have, but I didn't. So that's when I went on a search to find a better way. And I found the 1031 exchange. And from that point on, I started doing them for myself. And my wife and I managed to move our portfolio from Denver, Colorado to the Northeast to Florida, all along the way, never paying a penny in tax, investing in different levels of investment in commercial real estate. And at the end of 10 years, we're able to buy a 53-foot sailboat with tax-free dollars, move on to it, raise our four children for 10 years, living off the income from my 1031 private clients and our short-term vacation rentals that we had. So I became hooked early on for what it did to us, and I've been doing it now for others, for, like I say, 24 years.
I love that. So talk to me, what would be the difference in, I mean, there's a big difference here, so I don't want the listeners to take this or get it confused, but versus doing the 1031 exchange versus doing a cash out refinance, where that money that you get from cash out refinance, you don't need to pay taxes on either, correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And it's funny that you should mention that, because there's this really cool confluence. So when you are doing cash out refinances, first of all, you're at the mercy of the interest rate.
Yep.
Secondly, you're at the mercy of that property.
Correct.
But what if that property is not performing the way that you like? Or what if the market is telling you that it's time to change locations?
Yeah, time to sell.
San Francisco to Austin. It's time to sell for whatever reason. What if you've got some looming capital expense items, like a new roof, whereas you could sell it now? I mean, a new roof will wipe out a decade of long-term rental gain on regular income. So if you're needing to sell the property because the market's telling you, for whatever reason, then it's hard to do a cash out refinance.
Yeah. If there's a death in the family, if you want to move, if you're like, hey, this property sucks now, I don't want it, or you see it at its peak, then it would be a smart decision to move and sell this thing. Then exactly instead of paying the capital gains, the idea of a 1031 is to find another property that should be more expensive, correct? Or what? There are certain guidelines and requirements in between that need to take place so that you can offset your taxes, and it's postponing them, right? It's not getting rid of them forever. It's just postponing, and you can keep 1031ing until forever, right?
The answer to the first is no, you can keep them at bay forever. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you can actually eliminate them. And thirdly, yes, you can keep 1031ing forever as long as you want.
Okay.
So here's where those two parts, though, come into play. The 1031 allows you to respond to what the market is telling you, to what your property is telling you, and to what where you're at in your own life cycle are telling you. Because you can 1031 into any type of real estate, anywhere in the country, at any price point, as long as you're actually replacing it with as much real estate as you sold. So that part is cool. But here's where the refi comes in. Everybody says, but wait a minute, I need cash to live. It's no fun to invest in real estate if I took it and enjoy some of it. Well, so you sell a property, you pay tax on it. But what if you did 1031 exchanges? And then after you buy the new property, then you do cash out refinances whenever needed. The cash out refinance is not taxable. And yet you get the money that you need to do whatever you want to with it. And guess what? The tenant is paying the mortgage.
Yeah. So basically, long story short, any properties that you want to keep for the long run, you'll just do that cash out refi if there's equity in it and if the market is right with the rates. Otherwise, you can do a HELOC and so forth. Or, you know, technically, if you live in it, there's some other banks and lenders out there that will do it if it's an investor property, but far and few between it in these days and markets. But if you do plan on selling, what you would want to do is 1031, and you would want to, whatever you're selling it for, you need to buy something similar at that price range, correct? Is that what you were mentioning?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Let's play a game of what I call the four D's of 1031 investing. We'll let the listeners guess what the D's are going to be. I'll give you the first one. The first D in 1031 investing is defer, because anytime you sell a piece of property, you replace it with real estate that's at least equal to or greater in value than what you sold, you indefinitely defer and pay the tax on that profit. So that gets you into the compounding. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it's 2 years or whether it's 30 years, the profit and the profit on top of the profit is all yours to keep. So that's why the first one is defer. You get it started. And then every day that you keep it going, the money's in your pocket. Mm-hmm. Okay, the second D is defer. Because the 1031 exchange will let you accommodate wherever you find the market. Is it time to move from single family into multifamily? 1031 exchange. Maybe sell several single family properties, use them to buy a larger multifamily property. Maybe it's telling you that it's time to go back into single family. So you sell a commercial property and you buy several single family properties. Maybe it's telling you that there's raw land. That's the best investment now. So you 1031 for construction into raw land, commercial into industrial. The 1031 accommodates anywhere in the country, any type of real estate of any kind.
So what is the second one?
You said defer.
So both of them are defer?
What do you think the third one is?
Yeah, defer.
Yeah. Here's why. Because just like the 1031 exchange allows you to accommodate where the market is, we're not the same investor today that we were yesterday. We all start out with more energy than money. So generally, we start out smaller, and we let scales and effort build our portfolio, don't we? But at some point in time, we start to have less time and more money. So we start to try to invest in real estate in ways that maximize the time we have and make more use of our money. Or they allow us to go from active to passive investing as we get closer to retirement. And the 1031 exchange, again, because you can change the type at will, allow you to accommodate that. You started to mention, just in passing, the idea of conversion. It's possible to take a 1031 property with all kinds of deferred tax in it and convert that into your primary residence. And we see that very often at the end of some people's careers when they're getting ready to retire. They've spent a few years positioning their Cincinnati portfolio into Sarasota, Florida, wherever. And when they're ready to retire, the last thing that they do is they sell their Cincinnati home. Now, the proceeds of the sale of your primary residence are treated differently. If you're a married couple, you get to take the first $500,000 of profit tax-free. And you could do that once every 2 years. So on their way out to start retirement, they get to put $500,000 tax-free in their pocket. When they move to Florida or California or Santa Fe or wherever their portfolio is, instead of buying another primary residence, they convert one of their rentals into a new primary residence. And as long as they own it, it's still tax deferred. And anytime they sell it, after owning it long enough, they get to take an allocation of the gain tax-free. So throughout their retirement, they're able to chip away and turn some chunks of that tax-deferred gain into tax-free gain. Mm. That's a great retirement gig.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so that's so that third D is wherever you're at in your real estate cycle as an investor and a person, you can use the 1031 exchange to work with you. Tons and tons of doctors and medical professionals will get started, build their portfolio, and then realize, gosh, we'd love to have a place to vacation.
Yeah.
So they move into short-term rentals where they get some personal use of the property as well. Pretty awesome stuff, right? So everybody out there, what do you think the fourth D is? Mm. And it's a trick question because it's not defer.
Mm.
It's actually die. And it's not something we normally think of, but it's something we're all heading towards.
Yeah.
So let's face the gorilla in the room. When you die, your heirs inherit your real estate as if they paid market value for it on the day you died. It's what's called a step up in paces. So the tax literally disappears for your heirs. You don't pay it. Your estate doesn't pay it. Your heirs don't pay it. By deferring the tax your lifetime, you're actually able to not only benefit yourself with a lot of tax deferred gain, you're also able to give your heirs a legacy of tax-free wealth in real estate. And I've got one family in particular that are just started a couple of years ago, their third generation of 1031 investing. Started with granddad. He died. His son got the properties. Didn't do 1031s for a while because he got them at market value. But then he started doing them again with us. And when he died a few years ago, his children inherited the property, again, tax-free. And they've just now started doing their own 1031 exchanges as well. So defer, 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 and die. And you will end up with a lot more money. So my answer to everybody who says, it's temporary, got to pay the tax anyways, is, well, even if you defer it for 2 days, you still get the benefit. But secondly, you don't ever have to pay it. Mm. There's plenty of off-ramps.
I like that. So talk to me about the requirements, because as there's time restrictions and certain things that need to be done. I believe it's you have to, before selling, within 30 days, you need to, you know, identify three different properties that you are interested in purchasing and then purchase actually one of them within 6 months, correct? To make that 1031 exchange qualify?
Yeah, not quite. It's there's some timing restrictions. First of all and foremost, and we'll just reemphasize it, you have to use an unrelated third party called a qualified intermediary. They have to be involved prior to the closing of your sale. If that doesn't happen, your exchange is done before it even starts.
Yep.
So that's most important. But then they're involved as part of the closing of the sale of your property. And that is the start of your 1031 exchange. From that date, you have an additional 45 days to identify your potential replacements. Now, you can be under contract for your new property anytime you want. You can even have both properties under contract so that you close your sale one day and you close the purchase the next day. That's perfectly fine. But the worst case for you is that from the date of the closing of your sale, you have 45 more days to identify your potential replacements. And you have a total of 180 days to complete the purchase. So we will have people that will use this as a hedge to get new construction because they will go into contract for a property that may be a year and a half away from being built, as long as they don't take title to any of it, it's going to qualify. When that property is within 4 or 5 months of being done, they will then sell their old property. They've got the 45 days, so they identify the property they've already had under contract for a year. And then within 180 days, it's completed and they take title to it. And I can't tell you what a sigh of relief I've heard from so many of these clients who transitioned from a 1920s duplex in Kansas City that needed a roof, that needed plumbing and had termites and whatever, into a brand new house with 10-year warranties on everything. What an effective way of going from high capital expense risk to low capital expense risk.
I love that. Is there any like thresholds? What if you can't close one of those properties within the 6 month, the 180 days? Also, like, is there extensions that you can pay for, or is there any options with that?
You know, let's not say that too loud because the IRS might get the idea and start charging us for that. But unfortunately, no, there is absolutely no, you will not get a personal extension or exemption.
Yeah.
Now, periodically, when large classes of taxpayers are affected, think of wildfire in California, the blizzards in the Mid-South, hurricanes in Florida.
Sure.
The president will declare a state of emergency.
Yes.
The IRS will agree. And then people in that affected class will get an extension, but you're never going to get one for yourself. So it's so, so important to make sure you're paying attention. If you're still within your 45 days and a property falls through, no problem. Identify another one. But if you're past day 45, you can't alter that list anymore. So I usually tell people, think of the 45 days, not so much as an identification period. Think of that as an, oh my gosh, I got to get this under contract period.
Okay.
So you can hedge your risks.
Yeah. So if all three of those properties end up falling out that you identified originally, can you swap that out for something else in the future, or that is what it is?
The industry term is you're toast.
Yeah.
You're going to pay the tax.
So does this put you in a liable position if the, say you were upgrading and you're wanting to do a 1031 buying a bigger apartment building, and the sellers end up finding out, which I'm sure you may disclose, that, hey, I'm doing a 1031. You're my last and final choice. You know, I need to close on this within a certain time frame. And the seller starts playing games with you and maybe asks for more or holds out. It's a strong negotiation side on the seller versus the person doing the 1031, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly can be.
Okay.
I think the fear of that is greater than the reality. It happens very, very, very seldom. But does it happen and can it happen? Absolutely. So there are ways to keep it anonymous.
Really?
So that it's not a part. Simply by making contracts assignable. That's all that we need as the intermediary to accomplish what we want.
Assignable.
So there's really no reason that a client ever has to be put at a disadvantage like that. But again, the idea is work quickly and try to have your contingencies out of the way so that you know there's no surprises out there. But I just got done working with one of my clients who sold and he was buying small tracts of land. And he did not have any of the five under contract. And he lost four of the five because he got outbid.
Wow.
And I just, you know, so.
When you say five, what do you mean five?
Well, he had five parcels he was going to buy. He only had one under contract. So he lost four. So in essence, he was basically not going to shelter any tax. So what he had to do was to go to the actual buyers who had outbid him on all four properties.
And pay a premium?
Gave him $10,000 and let him purchase them.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Well,
he paid a premium.
A very not good day.
Yeah,
it was better than paying the tax for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure it still saved him a pretty penny versus paying it. So what else is needed for this? Is there anything that I'm missing here that people may not, like, does everybody qualify for this?
So you have to be selling real estate.
Sure.
That has to be used for investment. So one of the nuances that people don't understand is that.
Let me cut you off there for a second. So for your own primary house, could I do a 1031 with my own primary house?
Different rules.
Okay.
Better rules. With your primary, remember, if you've lived in it for 2 out of the 5 years prior to selling it, that is a single taxpayer, you get the first $250,000 of profit tax-free. That's better than a 1031. If you're married, you get to take $500,000. And you could do that once every 2 years. So for your primary residence, it's always better to do that.
Okay.
Take that tax-free. So it can't be your primary residence. It can't be property that you intend to resell. Your intent in the property that you own has to have been to hold it for productive use.
How long is that for, though? Is that 1 year time frame?
Good question. There isn't a time frame.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's brutal. So there is no statutory hold period.
Yeah.
The standard truly is what your intent was and how you can identify, how you can demonstrate that.
Sure.
Now, most people would tell you that just about everybody's comfortable with a year, but there's no magic to that. You still have to be able to demonstrate that your intent was to hold it. There's even a famous court case where a guy sold an entire subdivision after owning it for 15 years. He got it right before the market crash of 08 and held it for 15 years and sold it, did a 1031, but he was audited for something else. And the IRS determined that his intent in owning that was not to hold it because he never took it off the MLS. It was always officially for sale for 15 years. The IRS said, no, you didn't intend to hold this. Oh my gosh. So now that's one extreme, Brandon. Here's the other extreme. I had a client who owned a property for 2 months and he called me and said, damn, I want to do a 1031 exchange on this. I said, no. You bought this. Now you're reselling it. You're a flipper. You cannot do a 1031 if your intent was not to hold it. He said, but I had to agree to honor the long-term lease that the property was under when I bought it. That's in the sales agreement. So can I do a 1031? I said, well, okay, that says that you were going to, but the reality is you're not holding it. How could you say that you're not intending to resell it? And he said, oh, it's because of the bear. Right after he purchased the property and had black bear took up residence at his tenant's trash can. And the tenant was too scared to take the trash out. So she vacated the lease and left. And he did not want to mess with a bear as a neighbor.
Yeah.
So he decided to sell it. And the kicker was it was beautiful because his accountant said, Dave, we've got the Ring photographs of the bear in a file if the IRS ever wants to ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very easy to demonstrate his intent.
I love that. That makes total sense. What are the downfalls of doing a 1031 exchange? Are there any?
Well, you're talking to the guy who's made a living with them.
Yeah, yeah. So no downfalls to you.
Of them, so.
Yeah.
I would say this. If you are not going to move forward with any type of real estate investment, and by that I mean even something like a syndication type thing, something passive, something that would be sort of like a REIT, but not. If you truly just want to get out and go by Google, the 1031 is not for you. For everybody else, you kind of have to look at it piece by piece and say, if I sell this property, if I've got, say, a $200,000 gain on it, that's very easily a $50,000 to $60,000 tax. So if I'm going to sell this and not do a 1031 exchange, it's going to cost me $60,000. So I'm only going to have $140,000 left to go do something else with. You've got to factor that against the return that you can make with $140,000 in something else. And if that's going to be a greater return, certainly you don't do the 1031.
Yeah.
But what we find most of the times, though, is that that tax takes such a chunk out.
Yeah.
That you actually end up better. Even if, heaven forbid, you end up in an environment where you feel like you're having to overpay for property. I mean, I hear that all the time these days. And my first response always is, well, wait a minute. I get it that you can't find properties to buy as cheap as the one you just sold.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you really think you would have sold that property right now for as much as you did if we were not at that time in the market?
Yep.
So the best time to start a 1031 exchange is in a seller's market. The worst time to finish a 1031 is in a seller's market. The best time to complete a 1031 is in a buyer's market when you get to choose what you want. The worst time to start a 1031 is in a seller's market because you're going to have trouble selling your property. So you just have to recognize that. It's not a perfect world, but there's a way to use that equilibrium. to continually better yourself. And secondly, my best advice to people is start with the hard thing first. If finding your new property and getting it under contract is the hardest thing to do, then do that first.
Yeah.
Get it under contract, then close the sale.
Sure.
Of your old property. If it's the reverse, sell the property first.
Yeah. I love that. Dave, we talked a lot about like different things of what you can't do and no exceptions behind it. But what is your best example of somebody that has messed up a 1031 exchange so that we could potentially learn from?
Well, you've got my friend of the land.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That's a good one.
Speaking of which, may I just ask, do you know like what was his reasoning behind that? I mean, hanging on to it for 15 years, you're definitely not selling it. Did he just want some interaction and some phone calls on a regular basis or what?
Oh, you know, that guy right there with the big one. Actually, I don't even know him. That's okay. Just a court case. Okay. I was talking about the guy that had to go renegotiate because he got a bid for all his property.
Yeah.
Now, that guy in particular would not have 1031'd it because he was a land developer. His intent at the very beginning was not to hold it. He was simply going to sell the subdivision, pay the tax, and walk away. But because he ended up holding on to it for 15 years, he decided to try it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, got caught. There's another very famous court case out of the Chicago where the guy lost because there was no 45-day list, there was no paperwork associated.
Sure.
But he went into his account, and his argument in court was, my son is an attorney, and he was my qualified intermediary. And the intermediary has to be a third party anyways.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that guy on all kinds of levels. As a matter of fact, I heard that the judge was laughing as he slammed the gavel.
And what that just comes down to is simple ignorance, believing that you're doing it correctly without having the proper education and guidance from, you know, the real officials to be able to guide you properly. It doesn't seem like there's too many rules in place, but there are a couple that are very significant, that are very needed, and there's no exceptions. So play by the rules, and it can really benefit you and serve you well.
Never trust my something attorney.
Yeah, exactly. That's never a good reason in court or out. That's good.
Exactly. But I would say those, the people that I see struggle with 1031s, and by the way, we do frequent audits, and even in the hottest part of the market, 93% of our clients were still completing their 1031 exchanges. So it's not like it's this real crapshoot.
Yeah.
And they fall apart every day. That's just urban myth. But the people that do struggle are those people that do not plan ahead to know where they want to go and into what. I had a client once, on day two, I could guarantee you her exchange was going to fail because she sold her property and then called me to start to talk about commercial property in the Northeast, a hobby farm in New Hampshire, a short-term vacation rental in San Diego, or Florida condos. And I just said, you're all over the map. Geographically, you're all over the map. In terms of sector, there is no way you're going to be able to focus yourself enough at 45 days to get it together.
Mm.
And sure enough, she couldn't find anything. So what's the worst that happens? There's no penalty for starting and not completing.
Yeah.
So for the price of an exchange, which could be $1,000, you're buying the opportunity to try to save $30,000 or $40,000. And I guess, you know, my thought has always been, if you were to come to me, Brad, and tell me that you're selling lotto tickets for $1,000 each that have a 95% chance of winning $40,000, I'm going to break my right arm trying to buy everything I can.
Yeah.
Because it's going to work.
Yeah, I like that. So how long do you think this is going to last for, Dave? You know, there's been talks in the past about the government possibly taking it away or whatever it may be. I know a lot of these strategies are really made for the wealthy and the educated middle class, and others start really learning how to do these things to become that as well. But talk to me, how long do you think this is going to be around for? Do you think it's going to be around for the long run?
Yeah, I actually do. And here's why.
Good.
First of all, it's been in the statute.
Yep.
Since 1920.
Yep.
So it's not anything new.
Yeah.
It's just been interpreted as far as the rules surrounding it differently. So, and it has been a huge driver of economic activity. First in 1920, it allowed farmers to sell their small farms and buy bigger farms.
Yep.
Which they couldn't do if they had to pay tax in the middle.
Correct.
But then not only that, but all of the young people that wanted to become farmers had nothing to buy. So it stimulates the economy that way. People move up, people move in. And in this day and age, and what Congress gets shown time after time, because every president I've been under has talked about getting rid of it.
I know.
And this crazy bunch in Washington now have talked about getting rid of it every year.
Yeah.
And every year, people trot out the economic numbers, which say that, first of all, it's not a rich guy's game.
Yep.
The average price of an exchange is $380,000. Does that sound like the rich people in America?
No.
No, that's us.
Yeah.
Secondly, the amount of capital gains that they would get, and remember, capital gains is a cheaper tax rate, is minuscule compared to the amount of ordinary income tax they get from two real estate commissions,
yep,
middle company closings, two painters prepping the properties for sale and purchase, sure, two appraisers,
and
two
attorneys. Yeah.
It's a boom to the economy. It's billions of dollars.
Yeah, it affects a lot more.
Yeah, exactly. And every time they make the noise about shutting it down, then the economists come out and say, here's what will happen if you do, and they let it go.
Yeah.
It's one of the best drivers for real estate that there is.
I love
that. So I'm starting to get pretty confident with it.
Yeah, good. Is there any limits to the 1031 exchange? I know that you can do it as many times as you like, correct? But is there a dollar amount? Like, you can't do it with like $1 billion type of portfolio type of thing, or put it into something bigger, can you?
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah?
There's no limit on the size you could go up. As a matter of fact, think about what the government would love. Would they not love for you to sell $1 billion in real estate?
Oh, yeah.
And then go buy $2 billion?
Yep.
That's economic activity. In order to defer all tax, you've got to purchase at least as much as you sell.
Sure.
Well, that's kind of the minimum threshold. Because if you take money out, or if you buy less than you sell, the IRS says you're taking out some profit.
Yeah.
So you need to pay tax on that difference. But other than that, the question comes down to, and maybe this is kind of what you were talking around, was, is it worth it?
Yeah.
To do a 1031 exchange. And I've had people that have said, even though my tax bill is going to be six figures, in this case, it's not worth it to me. Okay. I had a little lady the first time in 2003, right after I started, who sold a lot for $11,000. By the time she paid her 1031 fee, she was going to save $500. And I asked her, I said, are you sure that you want to go through this? And she, Dave, that $500 is mine.
Yeah.
I want it.
Yeah, pay up. Yeah.
Yeah. She was adamant. So it really comes down to, what are you going to do? And in my book, if you're going to continue investing in real estate, the compounding effect, no matter how small it starts, is always going to outweigh selling, paying the tax, going to cash, and waiting for the market to correct. Because how many people were talking in 2018? The market's going to crash next year.
Sure, yeah.
2019, the market's going to crash next year. Here we are in 2024. The market's going to crash next year.
People are getting, you know, a little winded on it. They don't have any other.
Yeah.
They're just like, I don't know what it's going
to
happen.
Meanwhile, they're continuing to sell these properties and pay all this tax.
Yeah.
The 1031 exchange is a law. It's the law game. It's for people that are patient. Yeah, that's really what it comes down to.
I like that. Yeah, very good. Well, talk to me, Dave. How can people get a hold of you? A
couple different ways. The first one is, we've set up an entire educational identity website, the 1031investor.com, where we have access to about 50 YouTube videos. Our channel is on YouTube as well. We've got calculators that can help you determine, so you can make a cost-benefit analysis, date calculators for your dates, articles, ways to talk to our counselors directly. And that's a great way to start, because the longer, the more runway you can give yourself, the better your 1031 experience will be. And then the second way, if I can plug it shamelessly, is that I did just write a book on Amazon called Lifetime Tax-Free Wealth, The Real Estate Investor's Guide to the 1031 Exchange. It incorporates our personal journey, case studies of a lot of people we've worked with, as well as all that nuts and bolts stuff that goes into making a 1031 successful.
I love it. And then what's the going rate, I guess, for the cost involved for somebody like your services?
You should be able to get a good 1031 exchange for a national intermediary for less than $1,000. for us, $950. It's going to be a little bit more expensive if you go to each coast.
Sure.
But that's primarily because they've got office space.
Yeah.
They have to rent. So
that makes sense. You know,
but $1,000.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. I love it. Awesome, Dave. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It was a wealth of knowledge. It's something I've always thought about doing in the future as well with some of my properties. And yeah, I just love it. So thanks for doing what you do and pouring into the listeners today. It was great info. Thank you.
It was awesome to be here.
Thanks. And then guys, if you want to get a hold of me, you can always do so on Instagram. Go to Brandon Elliott Investments. Otherwise, on Instagram, you can check out Credit Counsel Elite and be sure to follow us there. Also, if you haven't already subscribed to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, what are you waiting for? Do that right here, right now. It would mean the world to me so that you get the newest notification every single Monday when the new episode drops. And leave a 5-star review after listening to the next few episodes. I appreciate it greatly. Also, if you want to get a second opinion on how we are getting business owners up to $500,000 at 0% interest in a bunch of stacks of cards in the next 30 to 90 days, getting a 90% approval odds with the banks, make sure you check out creditcounselelite.com. That's www.creditcounselelite.com, showing you how to get massive amounts of funding in short periods of time at 0% interest so that you can grow and scale your business and start real estate just like we have. And you can get a second opinion after booking a call with us. Till next time, guys, appreciate you so much. We'll see you on the next episode next Monday. And Dave, thank you so much. It was a great episode. Talk soon, guys. God bless.
This has been another episode of Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, brought to you by Brandon Elliott. For more information, please visit BrandonElliottInvestments.com. Also, please don't forget to like, share, and leave a comment below. Thanks again for joining. Until next time, God bless.